ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 2, text 3 onwards. 3, 4, 5 have no purport. So, I'll chant 3, 4 and 5 first. Karaladam stro gradrishtya dushpreksya brukuti mukha shulam udyamya sadasi danavanidam abravit. Exhibiting his terrible teeth, fierce glance and frowning eyebrows, terrible to see, he took up his weapon, a trident, and thus began speaking to his associates, the assembled demons. Text 4 and 5. Bho bho dānava daityaya dvimurdham strekṣa shambara shatabāho hayagrīva namuche pāka ilvala viprachitte mamavacha puloman shakunādayah shinutāntataram sarve kriyatāmāshumāchiram. O Danavas and Daityas, O Dvimurda, Treksha, Shambara and Shatabahu, O Haigriva, Namuchi, Paka, Ilvala, O Viprachitti, Puloman, Shakuna and other demons, all of you kindly hear me attentively and then act according to my words without delay. Text 6. Sapatnair, Sapatnair Gatitak Shudrair Brata Me Daitas Surit Parshnigraheena Harina Samenapyupadhavanai. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: my insignificant enemies, the demigods, have combined to kill my very dear and obedient well-wisher, my brother Hiranyaksha. Although the Supreme Lord Vishnu is always equal to both of us, namely the demigods and the demons, this time, being devoutly worshipped by the demigods, he has taken their side and helped them kill Hiranyaksha. As a note, Sapatnai means the enemies. It is written that both the demons and demigods understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the Supreme Master. But the demigods follow the Master, whereas the demons defy him. Thus the demigods and demons are compared to the two co-wives of one husband. Each wife is the sapatni, co-wife of the other. And therefore the word sapatni is used here. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.29, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, the Lord is equal to all living entities. Since the demigods and demons are both living entities, how is it possible that the Lord was partial to one class of living beings and opposed to another? Actually, it is not possible for the Lord to be partial. Nonetheless, since the demigods, the devotees, always strictly follow the Supreme Lord's orders, because of sincerity they are victorious over the demons, who know that the Supreme Lord is Vishnu, but do not follow His instructions. Because of constantly remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, the demons generally attain Sayujya Mukti after death. The demon Hiranyakashipu accused the Lord of being partial because the demigods worshipped him. But in fact, the Lord, like the government, is not partial at all. The government is not partial to any citizen. But if a citizen is law-abiding, he receives abundant opportunities from the state laws to live peacefully and fulfill his real interests. Sapatnair ghatitaha kshudrair Bhrata me daita surit parshni grahen harina samenapi upadhavanai. This is how Hiranyakashipu understands the whole subject matter. As Prabhupada clarifies here, demons and demigods are always enemies of each other. How does one get enemies in this world? If you have anything, you get a competitor. Only when someone has nothing, absolutely nothing, then no one feels any threat, any fear from you. And that is the reason why you're not speaking of big, very pronounced or prominent material qualities. But even the simplest of possessions someone might have, and that attracts fear in the mind of the possessor, or jealousy, envy. Arjun, in one of his outpourings before he has surrendered to Krishna, he says, Avapya bhumava asapatnam riddham rajyam suranam apichadipatyam asapatnam. O Krishna, we need not think about this particular limited battlefield which will give me a kingdom to enjoy. But even if I get avapya, much bigger kingdom to enjoy, avapya bhumav asapatnam riddham, very prosperous rajyam, a kingdom, suranam api, even if a kingdom is more prosperous than demigods, I don't think that will solve my problem. Because my problem is, I am facing indecision, what I am supposed to do. What is dharma for me? What is duty for me? Basically, the first chapter has only one overbearing question which needs an answer, and that is, what is one's proper duty? And mind you, our duty changes. Just like life is like a kaleidoscope. In our crafts class in the school days, we could have seen a kaleidoscope. You put some broken pieces of glass, bangles, whatever, into a triangle-like structure with mirrors on all three sides. And then you can see a pattern in it. A little twist and the whole design changes. One more twist and the design has changed. Many times life, we try to understand a particular situation, and then we go to our notebook, we come across all the possible explanations of how to solve this. But before we go to apply the solution, the situation has changed. So again the parameters change. And that causes so much frustration. How many times should we go back to the book again and again? The formula seems to be very clear, that if you just be happy, that's it. You don't need to do anything else. But how does one become happy? What things are required to become happy? Those who don't have, they have an explanation. I'm not happy because I don't have. What about those who have those things and still they are unhappy? That's a big puzzle. So therefore, Arjuna is saying that I'm not satisfied just because if I get a bigger kingdom. What I need is transcendental knowledge. So here Hiranyakashipu is saying that the demigods, kshudrair, they're very insignificant. I don't consider them worthy opponents at all. And Daita Surit, my brother, whom I loved so dearly. Daita is very dear. Surit, he was also my well-wisher. And then, it's not exactly fair to say that Lord Varaha killed him from the rear. There was so much of a fight between them. But this is how demons try to twist the truth. Here he's saying, look at my brother, he was so powerful. Unfortunately, he was killed from the rear. Like you see a person with a bullet on the back of his head. And that is like cowardly. Why somebody killed him like that? Normally, if somebody is a fair enemy, a fair opponent, you charge from the front. So in one word, he is telling his followers that look at our enemy. Look at the friend of our enemies. The one who helped them kill my brother. He is not even a fair opponent. Harina. And he knows who this opponent is. Samenapi upadhavanai. Although he should be equal to both of us, because of some cheap worship given by the demigods, now he's become there. He's on their side. Throughout the pages of Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand how a demigod thinks, how a demon thinks, especially relevant to us because in Kali Yuga it is said that both these attitudes or propensities are present in the mind of every living entity, especially in the human form of life. So it's not that we are engaged in the study of some demon just to see that, oh, look how wretched, how cruel he was. Like yesterday somebody was discussing about how do we understand demons who are now, we are not supposed to look at them like demons. Narad Muni has given the answer. They are Nitya Siddha associates of the Lord. So how they behave like this? Well, one plausible understanding is that this is how we will behave if we give in to demonic propensities. It's not like we could be spared, or these are just some fanciful narrations of the past. You open the newspaper and you could be amazed as to how cruel someone can be, how greedy someone can be. There are people in the business field and they say that money and power are essential to run a good business, but not like Enron. That is greed. That is too much. But at one point of time, people who were running that whole show were not feeling that it was too much. Those who were running it and those who were sharing some money with the shareholders, they were feeling, yeah, it's fair. It's a nice corporation. They are giving so much dividend. They are giving so much of their wealth. Only when it is revealed that this whole thing was put up just to make a few people who are already rich, super rich. And that's when people are aghast. But that's the most people can do. We are just aghast. There is no explanation as to why somebody can become so greedy, why someone can condemn hundreds and thousands and millions to death and still be having a clear conscience or a clear heart. So this is the mystery. It's not exactly a mystery, because we can understand once you give in to the idea that Vishnu is my enemy, then everything falls in that line. And even Vishnu then starts treating you like an enemy. In the Mahabharata, Yudhishthira Maharaj is described as Ajata Shatru. Ajat, never born, Shatru. One whose enemy was never born. But we can see that Yudhishthira Maharaj, as his name suggests, Yudhishthira, very steady in battle. That means he must have fought some battles, he must have fought wars. How do you fight without having an enemy? The real idea is, Yudhishthira Maharaj didn't see anyone as his enemy from his heart. Others might have thought him as his enemy for various reasons. That is the greatness of his character. So here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada again begins by saying that Lord Krishna is Samoham. Samo Aham Sarvabhuteshu. I am equal to everyone. At the same time, we see sometimes the Lord favoring his devotee. In one purport, Prabhupada tackles this issue. How do we understand that the Lord is the Lord comes under the control of his devotees. Bhritya Vashyata. This whole Damodar Leela is summed up in one word by Shukdev Goswami. This is Bhritya. Bhritya is servant. Vashyata. How the Lord comes under the control of his servant. So Prabhupada clarifies, the Lord doesn't come actually under the control of the servant. He comes under the control of the love of the servant. And this unalloyed love is what makes all the difference. In the 11th canto, 11th chapter, 33rd text, Krishna says, Jnatva adjnatva ye vai mam yavan yaschasmi yadrisha bhajanti ananya bhavena teme bhakta tamamata. He says, jnatva ajnatva. Sometimes devotees say that I am chanting for the last so many years, but I don't know so much about Krishna. Or the classic one, I read so many times, but I don't remember anything. Or there are so many books Prabhupada has written. In fact, at one point of time, when a new book would come out at Kartik, at least in the ashram, it would be like, wow, a new book. But now sometimes you say, oh, another one. That means I already have so many which I have not read yet, and now here comes another one. Well, blame it on the process. If you have to blame anyone, this process is unlimited. Krishna is unlimited. Krishna's devotees, their glories are unlimited. Srila Prabhupada, when he was on the planet, and for those 11 years, for most devotees, apart from a few leaders, for most devotees, they were just in their small corner doing their gardening, deity worship, or some editing service, some proofreading service. They never knew what on the other side of the globe something is happening. And now that devotees are writing their memoirs, so many books have come out, and they realize, oh, this is something which even we didn't relish while Prabhupada was there on the planet. So it's not like only we feel that Prabhupada in Germany, Prabhupada in Malaysia, Prabhupada in Australia. It's not like all the devotees were aware of all these pastimes. So therefore, this will expand. But it doesn't mean that all of us have to know all this. If any time someone tries to approach Krishna with the mood that I'll try to maximize whatever I can about this person and then I can know him. It's not like your mind can be like a suction pump and you just apply it to Krishna Leela and the whole thing gets filled up. Even if your mind gets filled up, you'll find that the ocean is still there. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, I am a small bird. Gauranga Leela is like a huge sky. I may fly, I may break all records. But what is the meaning of breaking all records? My own. Still yesterday I was flying at this level, today I am flying at this level. So I have broken a new record, I made a new record. That could be the beginning for someone else. And that's how it happens. So therefore, Krishna is giving an assurance here. Jnatva, ajnatva. Somebody might know me, somebody might not know me. But, Vishwanath Chakravarti gives a nice comment here. If one knows, yavan in this word verse means unlimited. Yaha, absolute truth. And yadrishi, yaschasmi yadrishi. Yadrisha means, I am aptakam, I am atmaram. Krishna is atmaram. He gets pleasure on his own, within himself. He doesn't need anyone else's help, association or anything. There is a point in the Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna realizes Krishna's greatness and he offers an apology. Sakhe iti matva prasabham yaduktam he Krishna he yadava he sakheti ajanata mahimanam tavedam maya pramadat pranayena vapi. After seeing Krishna's virat roop, Arjuna is saying, I am actually sorry. Previously I used to call you Sakha. Sakha, hey Krishna, or hey Yadav. Now we might feel there is no harm in calling Krishna Yadav. But our acharyas give the what Arjuna was feeling inside. When Arjuna used to call Krishna as only Krishna, not Sri Krishna, he was feeling that, well, you know, you are just the son of Vasudev, who is just an ordinary minister. Well, I am the son of Pandu, who was a great warrior. So I am a little bit superior to you. Or Yadav, hey Yadav. That means we the Pandavas, actually we are the Kurus. There is only one ancestor for both Pandavas and Kauravas. So in strict sense, it is the Kurus who are supporting the whole system. Because you Yadavas, you were kicked out of your own place. You don't have any place to stay. You can't rule. So you are a good dynasty, you are a good community, but you don't have any, you don't have any kingdom. But we are Kurus. Or Sakha, I am your friend because although I am superior to you, I still sometimes maintain friendship with you. Now just imagine, if this could be in the minds of Arjuna, that sometimes I used to think like that. And that's why now he is saying, I am sorry. I never realized that this virat roop is this your insignificant display. This is what Prabhupada had in mind when he said that to the American people, you write God is great, but do you realize how great He is? And in fact, people are just complacent just to feel that, okay, we heard God is great and that's all. So no need to evaluate His greatness anymore. That's a demoniac mentality. While the devotee's mentality is, oh, He is so great, I should bow down to that greatness. And it's not easy, this unalloyed devotion, where Krishna is saying here, bhajanti ananya bhavena. Knowing my glories or not knowing my glories, if somebody just worships me, I am pleased. I consider him to be one of the best of the devotees. Srila Prabhupada was once asked that, if demons know that Vishnu can't be killed, so why do they try? Prabhupada said, that makes him a demon. That he may say, okay, here is Vishnu. There is Vishnu who can never be defeated, he's always very powerful. Nothing can alter his situation. So the demigod's mind is, well, if he's so great, then I might just... Like someone comes from the village, he's innocent, he's not talented, and he says, who's the richest man in this town? Why do you want? Well, I can just go and beg some work. If he can just engage me somewhere, because he's so rich, he can support me. That same little fellow, but with a criminal mind, he may say, who's the richest man here? Why do you want? Well, if I can rob him a little bit here and there, what's the harm? So he still remains insignificant, but his mentality is either demigods or demoniac, depending upon what he wants. Now, if, let's say the situation A, where he engages in some kind of service, there is plenty of scope. He can be maintained throughout his life. There is a chance he can become one of the most trusted servitors, so much so that this master may say, take all these keys. You handle everything. So that's what happens when somebody has this demigod mentality. But if a new entrant in town is found to be just crossing over the fence and trying to steal one cabbage from the cabbage patch, he says, next time you see him, beat him up. By that one act, for the rest of his life, he has become a criminal. Once in, I think, some college program, somebody asked that if Kamsa knew that Devahuti's eighth child is going to be Vishnu, who's going to kill me, why allow both of them in the same prison? Just keep them separately in two different prison houses so that There is no question of them coming together, and there is no question of any children being born to them. Now you may feel that, hey, this is something I understand. How come Kamsa with his big brain, he couldn't understand? The point is, of course, their brains are also controlled by Krishna. It is not that any powerful demon, however powerful he might be, he is independently powerful of Krishna. No. Like, for example, Kumbhakarna, when he wanted a boon, he wanted Indrapad. But with this fellow becoming Indra, it would be havoc for the rest of the universe. So Saraswati sat on his tongue. That's how poetically it is described. And instead of Indrapad, he says Nidrapad. So now that slight change of syllable became from Indrapad, a big controller of all planets, to a heavy sleeper. The sleeper class of demons. 6 months sleep. Again get up for one day, eat as much as you can, again sleep. So that's how sometimes these demons are tackled. Demons are generally fond of competition. So what is demoniac is the mentality. It's not the outward body, or it's not the outward show, it's not the rituals, or it's your, like, what is criminal is the mind. So therefore, even something like mukti is condemned as hellish by Vaishnava acharyas. Demons get this sayujya mukti. It is said in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Lord Krishna is hatari gati dayaka. When he kills his enemies, he gives them liberation. So on a scale, if zero seems to be like one point in life, positive, 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 that means you become more demigodly. Highest positive is when you become a Vaishnava, a pure devotee. And you stay with the Lord. There is immediate association with the Lord. There is association always, but as you go higher on the positive scale, you realize it. As you go negative, you become criminal, wretched, very wretched. Tanyaham dvishataha kruran, kshipammi ajasra ashubhan. Krishna says, I cast them more and more and more and more and more down. When there is the negative also becomes, it increases like minus 1, minus 10, minus 10,000. At one particular point, you are fit to be killed by Krishna. So then Krishna comes and you become part of that Sayujya atmosphere. With one swift blow, Krishna just nullifies all the negative what is there in your heart. And that's a surprising thing. That those who were not so attached to the devotional process, but those who were jnanis or mukti kami, they might find sitting next to them somebody who was a demon. And just like if you exchange notes, you know, where were you from? Well, I celibacy for 3 lifetimes and learning slokas day in, day out, fasting 300 days of the year, and that's how I got this mukti. And the other guys may say, I ate, drank whatever I want, I fought hard with everybody, and the Lord killed me, and now I'm here. And you may say, that's not fair. True, it's not fair for you and me, for a limited living entity. But that's how the Supreme Lord is equal. He doesn't mind somebody. In fact, if the Lord acts upon someone, that there has to be this reaction of nullifying all karma. In the conversation between Sarvam Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was this kind of thing, whether like demoniac people feel this is illusion. This world is illusion. Lord Krishna gives this insight that this world is Neshwara, there is no Ishwaran control, and apratishtam, asatyam. This word is asatya, this world is asatyam. We also say sometimes illusion. What exactly is the illusion? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very, very mercifully gives like this classic Sanskrit concept of hasta malaka. Hasta is hand, amalaka is the amalaki fruit, amla. When you have the amalaki fruit in your hand, you can see from all sides, you can taste it. It's like this subject matter is within your control. Similarly, the vast Vedic array of so many literatures, so many viewpoints, so many angles, so many rishis, munis, all of them commenting on whatever they saw, some relative, some subjective, and that too in Kali Yuga with limited lifespan, with degraded habits, with always disturbances. How are we going to even begin our study of the Vedic literature? So in this classic dialogue between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Saurabh Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya just in one or two sentences gives the whole thing, like here, this is what the whole thing is. Jiver dehe atma buddhi se mithya hoy, jagat ye mithya nahe, nashwar matra hoy. Lord Chaitanya is saying, jiver dehe atma buddhi, thinking that this body is me, that is the only illusion in this world. Say mithya hoy, that's mithya. Jagat ye mithya nahi, this world cannot be considered false. Nashwar matra hoy, it is temporary, perishable. So just like a perishable thing, a perishable fruit, today it looks glorious. Today evening it actually increases, like when a fruit ripens, it becomes more and more attractive. But at one point of time, the ripening process stops and decaying starts. So it's not like if it was ripe 20 days ago, you open it today, it will be like very ripe. Now if you open it, you won't stand the stench. That's what happens with this world. Things grow from raw and they develop, and then you find, oh, like your human body. It's nice when it is a chubby, bonny baby. Then in youth, there is another kind of attraction. It's the prime of youth, it's glorious, but not like that prime continues. And then there is middle age, beginning middle age, whatever. And finally, when you take actual honest look at yourself, you say, I am old. I'm not mature, I'm not senior, I'm old. And then at one point of time, you have death. Like there was this funny, not funny exactly, but age reversing experts, brother and sister. They devoted all their life to how to reverse the aging process. And they strictly controlled their diet. And this person was not taking salt because he somehow suspected that salt may cause the aging process to actually accelerate. And he actually was looking 79 years old, but looking like not a teenager, but at least 35, 45 year old. And that was his solace, that at least I can conceal my real age. One day he fell in the ocean. And somehow he just drank too much salt. And he died of that. Now we may not die just because we fell in the salt ocean, but because he had not drank salt for such a long time, that acted like a toxin on his body. So there is no escape. So nashwara matra hoy, this world will come to an end. Now Saurabham Bhattacharya, as we are aware of the story, he is teaching Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Vedanta. He is 80 years old, almost like Brihaspati. Lord Chaitanya is a 24-year-old sannyasi. And the main question in Saurabham Bhattacharya's mind is, how is this fellow going to keep his sannyas intact? He looks upon him as a son or a grandson. So
he has this kind of filial attraction, like, my boy, my child, how are you going to, and you are so attractive. You go out with this countenance, this appearance. Do you know Vedanta? By the way, you gave me your name, your sannyas guru is Keshav Bharati. I really feel that Bharati is not a very high grade of sannyas. I will teach you Vedanta. And Mahaprabhu, like an obedient son or a grandson, he says, yes, all right. 7 days and seven nights, they are constantly together. Lord Chaitanya is hearing, and no question, not even a trace of any doubt on his mind. So finally, Saurabh Bhattacharya blurts out, Krishna Chaitanya, do you understand anything? And then Mahaprabhu, now he says, now is the time to speak. He has listened. Now is the time to speak. So he says, yes, I can understand everything. For the Veda Vakyas, which you have said, they don't need any explanation. They are like the sun. So what's the problem? Your explanations are the problem. They are like a dark cloud, which are completely blocking the sun's rays. In that, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that Saurabh Bhattacharya, true as a Nyayika, not just an old Nyayika, Navya Nyay, the new kind of logic which was fashionable during that time from Mithila, which he had learned. He went to Mithila, learned all those hundreds and thousands of verses by heart. Sort of he hacked that program because they were not allowing anyone to take the texts away. So he was the only one who learned them, came back to Vidyanagari and started his own academy. And then he went to Puri. He became the Raj Purohit. He was a very learned person, fabulously powerful, rich, prosperous. So therefore, when Lord Chaitanya told him, Bhagavan Sambandha Bhakti Abhideya Hoy, Prema Prayojan Veda Tina Vastu Koi. He said, don't think that the Vedas are having too many subject matters. You have to read so many things. You have to learn this way, that way. Three basic things are there in all Vedic literatures. Bhagavan Sambandha. The central point of all relationships is Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Bhakti Abhideya Hoy. The process to facilitate our connection with the Lord is bhakti, devotional service. Prema, the ultimate goal of the process of devotional service, is love of Godhead. That's all. There is nothing more. Ar jeje kichu kahe sakalai kalpana swataha praman vedavakye kalpena lakshana. Anything else you may find is all kalpana, imagination. Don't worry about it. Krishna, who is the originator of the Vedas, he also gives the same hint to Arjun that when your mind has crossed the dense forest of illusion, he compares the Vedic literature to a dense forest of illusion, then you will know everything, what is to be done, what is not to be done. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. Mostly the Vedic literature is three gunas, you come above them. Yadate Moho Kalilam. When you come out of this dense forest, so then Saurabh Bhattacharya says, wait a minute. What I told you was from Acharya Shankar. You mean to say that this person was a cheat? And Lord Chaitanya was expecting this kind of question. So he says, no. Acharya nahi dosh. It's not his fault. Do you know who he is? He's Lord Shankar himself. But just because we might not have somebody's personal opinions in theology or in philosophy, Lord Chaitanya provides a proof and evidence from a Puran where Lord Shiva is telling Durga Devi, I sometimes in Kali Yuga go as a Brahmana and give Asat Shastra, temporary or illusory kind of philosophy which takes people away from devotional service. But the ultimate aim is to push them in the direction of devotional service. For some time I do this. Now Sarvam Bhattacharya is slowly thinking that what an offense I committed. He gets stunned as the last sort of measure. He says there is this Atmaram verse. How do you understand it? So Lord Chaitanya offers, how do you understand it? In 9 different ways, Sarvam Bhattacharya explains this verse. And Lord Chaitanya says, well, that suits you. You are Brihaspati, so it suits you. I was expecting this kind of very erudite kind of explanation from you. I'm very happy. And he's very pleased. You mean to say you have some other explanation? He says, yes, Shukdev Goswami, Sanak, Sanatan, Sanandan, Sanat Kumar, the 4 Kumaras, Narad Muni, so many authorities, they have also given explanations. And now Sarvam Bhattacharya offers, I wish to hear them. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 58, 59, 60, 61, 63, 64. 64 ways Lord Chaitanya starts explaining the each and every word of the shloka. And Sarvam Bhattacharya says, stop! I don't think anyone, any mortal can speak like that. But Lord Chaitanya says, this is not the full thing. This is just like a beginning. And that is where Sarvam Bhattacharya surrenders. He falls flat. And in order to be merciful to him, Lord Chaitanya shows him his four-handed form. So basically this doubt about Krishna being the Supreme cannot be actually eradicated by someone else's efforts. Each and every living entity will have his own personal way of understanding God. There is no formula. Although there is a process, but there is no formula. So therefore, many people today would like to have their own path of discovery. And they feel like a temple, morning program, chanting the same mantra again and again, or the same kind of deities, the same kind of books. This seems to be so formulaic. How do I make my own path? Well, you need not make your own path. If you do, you risk joining the other party of Hiranyakashipu. And there too, there is so much hard work. It's not like demons are lazy people. Just in order to be worthy enemies of demigod, they work so hard. Only to have the whole thing defeated in the end. While the path of bhakti is easy to understand, it makes sense to understand. But what is difficult is the consistency in which we have to keep our mind on track. And therefore, when we hear these pastimes, that is a process which Lord Chaitanya really preferred. That if somebody hears how one particular devotee achieved unalloyed devotion, by that hearing process, thousands and thousands and millions of others for the rest of eternity can also achieve the same goal. And that is unalloyed pure devotion to Krishna. As again, I'll repeat the first verse which I quoted. 11th canto, 11th chapter, 33rd verse. Knowingly or unknowingly, if someone doesn't know who I am, if someone doesn't know how I exist, how I create, Lord Krishna says, doesn't matter. Bhajanti ananyena, if somebody worships me with unalloyed devotion, I think in one of his morning walks, Prabhupada saw a neon sign, unalloyed steel. And Prabhupada said, yes, we are like that. Unalloyed devotion. These people are making steel and selling it, thinking that their process is the best. Similarly, we are also in the same business. We give unalloyed devotion. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gantara Shrimad Bhagavatma Purana ki, Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Thank you.